All right, and so in a study of Kings, we begin, which is a narrative. I mean, Kings is certainly a narrative of the kings of Israel and Judah. We began in the time where there was one kingdom, and then we know they were divided to two kingdoms. And so we had Israel on the northern side of the 10 tribes, and then Judah. And then we also know on the northern side, the first king Jeroboam, that he had begun a worship to God that was not authorized. And what he began would never go away. Every king on the kings of Israel, on the northern kingdom, were to come to the sins of Jeroboam because they would build the high places. And as we talk about then, and we look at through the kings that we've gone through of Israel, all of them were bad kings. As we go through Kings, we're going to find out that God is not pleased with the decision and choices they were making. And so as we go through this, eventually annihilation takes place of the northern kingdom, thus left with the southern kingdom of Judah. And it's important, there was a promise made to David. And what was that promise made to David as far as future kings were concerned? There was a promise made that he'd always have a son sitting on the throne through his lineage. And that was the same lineage that Jesus Christ would come through, correct? And so as we get into this next section here in a little bit, we're going to find out that that's threatened, that the promise of God, that the Davidic line would continue, becomes threatened by somebody, and we're going to get to that. Also, we know some of the prophecy that would take place. In chapter 9, we know that Elisha was to appoint a king of Israel. And this king's name was Jehu. It was the same thing spoken to Elijah. He was given three things to do. A couple were passed on to Elisha. Elisha gave one of the sons of the prophet or someone to do the bidding. That was to anoint Jehu in the northern kingdom. And Jehu was to seek judgment on the house, the house of Omri. And from the house of Omri came his son. And his son was who? Omri's son was who? It was Ahab. Okay. Yeah, it gets confusing. And as we go to this one, it's almost like the days of our lives, where this person was the sister of this one and the mother of that one. I'm seriously. And it's like, whoa, this is confusing. And we'll find out here as we go through this. But what we have there is judgment because Ahab had did wrong to a point. I mean, his dad did wrong. And God was, okay, time out, enough. And this is what's going to happen. And Ahab married a Phoenician princess. Her name was Jezebel. And she was very wicked. She instituted Baal worship. So Jehu becomes king. And I want to make a point here as I begin in this study. So Jehu was to do what? He was to do what? What did Jehu do in chapter 10 with his sword? He was killing like there was no tomorrow. And so I want you to understand something. That's what God wanted him to do. He was a faithful in that arena. He was a faithful king because he said murder. Now, I mean, it was funny because to me it was almost like he enjoyed it so much. He started murdering the fifth cousin, fourth removed. I mean, he was just going with the sword. He was just taking care of business. Remember, there was one time that he took one of the Rechabites who he grabbed his hand and put him up on the chariot and said, "Watch my zeal for the Lord," which is a political move. Look what I'm doing. And so, I mean, he was very zealous. It said he had much zeal. He said that to the guy that he picked up in the chariot to say, "Watch me as they're going to Samaria." I mean, he's just killing all these descendants of Ahab. And so he had zeal. But the point I want to make is a point that's found in the book of Hosea for a moment, because we're not really told anything other than here's what he did. But there was an issue with him, and the issue was his motive. And this is the point I want to make. So I want you to go to the book of Hosea. When we go to Hosea, we're going to see some of the contemporary prophets at that time. It just depends on what book was written. Kings, Chronicles, there was always some prophet at some point. But Hosea spoke of this. I wasn't sure it was contemporary or not, but I want to misspeak there. But so someone go to Hosea. It's always fun in the Old Testament, in the minor prophets. Minor prophets that had major messages. But Hosea, which I found, fortunately, I'll be sweating up here trying to find it. And I want to take us to where in Hosea? So Hosea chapter 1, and where do I want to go? Okay, here I want to go. And the Lord said to him, name him Jezreel. Okay, so let's go up a little bit. This is Hosea. Remember, Hosea would end up marrying someone who would end up being a harlot. He was just making a point of how Israel was treating him. In other words, it's a point's being made through this book. But he told them, he says, when the Lord first spoke to verse 2 of chapter 1, he says, when the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, go take yourself a wife of harlotry and have children of harlotry, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and he conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, name him Jezreel. Because all the stuff that some of the stuff that was taking place was where? It was in Jezreel at the time here in Kings that we're talking about. And I will punish the house of Jehu for the bloodshed of Jezreel, and I will put to an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Well, hold on, God. You told me to kill these people. Am I right? And now you're saying because of the bloodshed? So why is he saying that? He's saying it because of the motives. So you can do things for the Lord, but what's your motive? So what we're seeing here is that his motive of killing people and doing things, even though the Lord told him and he was seeking judgment, his motive was messed up. Because that's why it says right there in Hosea. Otherwise, why would he do that? Now, we realize later that he would do a bunch of stuff, but then he would not follow the high places. All those things would happen again. So I just want you to think about that. And I'm actually constructing a lesson now based on this and something else that I came across as I'm doing my studies. And I don't know if I'll do my next lesson on that. Why do you do what you do? And that's even for why is Ed an elder? He has to ask himself that. Why do I teach and preach? Is it because I like doing it and I want people to say, well, I have a skill set and I can do that? Why do we do what we do? And sometimes we have mixed motives on things. So Jehu, although was faithful at some levels because he followed the instructions, his motives were not clear. Because he wasn't doing it the way that God wanted him to do it with the heart that he wanted him to do it with. So I just want to make that point out because sometimes we have to go to other places of scriptures to extrapolate these thoughts and these messages. So any thoughts on that? I thought that I would share that with you. Philip, love that shirt, man. Philip's bringing it today, man. You kidding me? Dude. Sorry about that. I'm back. Squirrel. All right. So that's kind of my beginning to this class. I wanted to talk about Jehu because we finished up because here's Jehu now. So Jehu rested with his fathers and they buried him in Samaria. Then Jehoahaz, his son, reigned in his place, and the period of Jehu reigned over Israel in Samaria was 28 years old. Now, what did Jehu do at the conclusion of this part? Right? He completed his task by killing a couple kings. Right, Jeroboam? And he also killed the king. So if you look at our little charts here for maps and stuff, so Jehu killed Joram, or Jehoram. It's amazing how some of the names are a little bit different. He killed Joram, but he also killed Ahaziah, right? Because he was the Jewish. Because remember, they were related, and there was a war going on with Assyria and the Syrians. And Jeroboam went back to a place to kind of, he got hurt, so he's there. Ahaziah comes and meets with him. And then here comes Jehu and kills them both. So both kings are dead at that point. So now there's not a king in Judah. So chapters 9 and 10 dealt with the northern kingdom, Israel. Now all of a sudden we begin, and now we're going to talk about the southern kingdom. So now we're back to the southern kingdom, and now we will begin knowing that there's no king right now in place. Are we good? Looking at everybody? Attentive? I'm right here, Lois. Hello? Okay, sorry. The inside joke. So you had to be there for that one. Okay. Start being a smart aleck. All right. 2 Kings chapter 11, verse 1. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah saw that her son was dead, right? Jehu had killed him. She arose and destroyed all the royal heirs. Now, I want to be real clear on this. Who is she killing then? She's killing her grandbabies. Am I right? She's killing the heirs to the throne. She's killing grandbabies and kids and all that kind of stuff. Now, I want to take a moment. If you'll go to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. So she was married. I got to be careful. I'm sure she was married to Joram. And remember Joram when he took over the kingship? So when Joram took over the kingship, let me just make sure I got him right. He took it from Ahaziah, a different Ahaziah, who was the son of Ahab. But when he came into place, go to chapter 21 and verse 4. Or I'm sorry, 2 Chronicles chapter 21 and verse 4. Now, when Jeroam, there's the H, I mean, sometimes Joram, I'm just going to say Joram, it's easy for me, but it's the same name, had taken over the kingdom of his father and made himself secure, he killed his brothers with the sword and some of the rulers of Israel. Now, so he's already killing heirs to the throne. Okay, so think about that. Now, I also want you to jump down to 16 and 17. Because now we're going to see the Lord also killed some of them. And in 16 and 17, the Lord stirred up against Joram the spirit of the Philistines and the Arabs who boarded the Ethiopians, and they came against Judah and invaded it and carried away all the possessions found in the king's house together with his sons and his wives, so that no one was left him except Joahaz, the youngest of his sons. So what I'm saying is, even when we get to this point, man, we're getting kind of down to the little bit of people of bloodline. Okay? So here's where she's at now. This is what Athaliah is doing. I pronounce those names, drives me bananas. I've been practicing them. Athaliah. Thank you. Athaliah. Okay, so let's continue on. But Jehosheba, the daughter of the king of Joram, sister of Ahaziah. So think about this. Ahaziah, whose was the parents of Ahaziah? Ahab. Now this, so Jehosheba, remember they had many wives. So she wasn't the daughter of Athaliah. Okay, just know that. But anyway, it's confusing. Again, over here, Days of Our Lives, it's confusing. But stay with me on this. But so here's Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's sons who were being murdered. And they hid him, all his nurse, in the bedroom from Athaliah so that he was not killed. And when it says bedroom, it's interesting because you have to understand, because you're thinking, well, it's a bedroom, but there's a bed. That's not the word here. The word here is a bed chamber. It's a place in the Orient where they would store mattresses and winter linen. So it's this big, huge room. It's not just a bedroom where she hid him underneath the bed. It's a big room in those big places, the castles and such, where there was just the bed linen, the mattresses, you know, because they wouldn't need as much in the summertime as the wintertime and so on and so forth. But that's where she hid him. And so that's what's going on. Because remember, what's at stake here? At stake is the lineage and the covenant to David that there would always be someone on the throne from his lineage. So I'm just telling you, if I was to ask you who Jehosheba is on the street, is it a boy or a girl? Y'all, like, just think about that. It's almost like an Esther story where Esther basically single-handed did what? Saved the annihilation of her people. And so here you have someone. I mean, God got down to nubbins here. I mean, it's like, whoa, this is super close. But I'm just telling you, it doesn't matter how close. God's will be done. Amen. End of story. And that's just how that is. Let's go to 2 Chronicles now, chapter 23. Because now there's a little bit more going on here. But you see up here that so he was hidden, you know, for 6 years while Althea reigned over the land. Now think about it, of all the kings and all the leaders of Israel, there's one time a woman's in charge. So it's almost like if Hillary Clinton got elected. Just kidding, can't talk politics, boom. But I'm just saying. So she took a throne that wasn't rightfully hers, was it? And how she got to it. But that's how it was back then. People, to get, you know, they wanted the power. And so she took advantage of a situation. I'll kill everybody, nobody's left. I'm the only one. I'm in charge now. And so if you go to chapter 23... Let me just see here for a moment. I'm juggling between these two. So you got this section here of this lady and what she had done. And then 1 Kings. So I'm going to just kind of go over here because, and just back up to the screen for a moment before I get to this other one. In the seventh year, Jehoiada sent and brought the captains of hundreds of the body. Jehoiada was one of the priests. I think it was high priest. Okay. Guess he was married to? He was married to the girl that just hid the baby. Interesting how that works. So let's read here a little bit in chapter 23. And now in the seventh year, Jehoiada strengthened himself. So here you have the priest. He strengthened himself. He took captains of hundreds, Azariah the son of Jeroham, Ishmael the son of Jonan, Azariah the son of Obed, Maaseiah the son of Adaiah, and Elisaphat and the son of Zichri, and they entered into covenant with him. And they went throughout Judah and gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah, and the heads of the father's households of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. So there's a big thing going on. It's going to be a coup, right? We have someone who's been in power for 6 years. The rightful king's been hidden the entire time. And now the presentation of this king's getting ready to go. But what do you think Althea is going to do if she finds out about that baby? Going to try to kill the baby. So Jehoiada, the priest, is getting the people together, right? He's working it. He's getting the guards. He's getting he's making this happen. So continue on here in verse 4. And so then all the assembly, in the house of God, I'm sorry, in verse 3, and Jehoiada said to them, "Behold, the king's son shall reign as the Lord has spoken concerning the sons of David." Right? They knew that because they had law. They had, this is what's going to happen. These are the fulfillment of such things. And the lineage of David would continue. So he's telling all these priests that would know these things and saying, "We've hidden him." And they're like, "Whoa, you kidding me?" Right? They're all like, "Okay." So they're gathered to make this big event take place. And in verse 4, then this is the thing which you shall do. 1/3 of you of the priests and the Levites who come on the Sabbath shall be gatekeepers. Right? He's dividing up the squad. And then 1/3 shall be at the king's house, 1/3 at the gate of the foundation. I mean, just kind of building this up in verse 6. But let no one enter the house of the Lord except the priests and the ministering Levites. They may enter, for they are holy, and let all the people keep the charge of the Lord. And the Levites will surround the king, each man with his weapons in his hand. And whoever enters the house, let him be killed. Thus, be with the king when he comes in and when he goes out. So they're doing all of these things. Verse 9. Then Jehoiada, the priest, gave to the captains of hundreds the spears and the large and small shields which had been King David's, which were in the household of God. Time out. It's almost like Excalibur just came out. How do you think they found about David? David was a warrior. I mean, imagine the stories that were shared of David and his weapons here, and they're pulling out these, in a sense, to not use any word, like a sacred kind of, like, just this memorial. Wow. We got David's stuff, right? This is a big thing. I'm building this up because it's a big deal. And so the Levites and all of Judah did according to all that Jehoiada, verse 8, it said, okay, I'm jumping all over the place. Verse 10. And he stationed all the people, each man with his weapons on his hand, from the right side of the house to the left side of the house from the altar. And then in verse 11, then they brought out the king's son and put a crown on him and gave him the testimony, or whatever version. I mean, I imagine the testimony is probably the law, probably is copy of the law. and made him king. And Jehoiada and his sons anointed him king. Long live the king. I'll switch back over here. It's interesting. We'll kind of read this here a little bit lightly. But what he also did is he had it happen at the time that the guards were changing out, where the new guards were coming in and the old guards were supposed to be. Philip knows about that, right? You're on guard duty and then the new guards come in, the other ones leave. He does it at the time that they're all together for that moment. And now the priests are there. So all of a sudden everything's just there so everyone can see that this is the lineage of David. This is the rightful heir. He's been hidden. And quite frankly, they had issues with Althea reading a little bit because she built Baal worship. Now, I told you last time, what did Jehu do that was right for the Lord in the northern kingdom? He got rid of the Baal worship. But then it creeped up on the southern kingdom because of who? Althea. She built a place in Jerusalem. Now, she didn't mess with the house of the Lord. Now, some of the stuff got ruined there and stuff was pulled out. But she allowed Jehoiada, the priest, to continue on. So she's just doing her thing here. Let them do their thing. And maybe because she felt if she did that, maybe there something else would take place. But that's kind of where we are. So back up here to 2 Kings. So again, it's the same thing. You know, he made, and we're reading here, and he made a covenant with them and took an oath from them, right? Think about this. We talk about oaths and covenants because remember there was one of the lessons that I had that we covered in where Jesus would go to the scribes and the Pharisees and talk about oaths, right? There was oaths that were made. There were covenants that men would make with each other, and there were oaths, and they would swear by God on those things. And when it was, that was a big deal when you swore by God. And later on, fast forward to the Pharisees, remember what they would do is they wouldn't swear by God. They would swear by the baptistry. I swear by the baptistry, I'm going to do this. Well, if they didn't do it, it didn't matter because it wasn't, you see what they did? They switched it to something over here to kind of loophole God's law. But oaths back then were important things and covenants. And that's the thing today. And that's why Beatitudes, make your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't swear by any oaths. And the point of that whole thing is that you just have to be a man of your word. That's the whole point of that. Be a man of your word. Yes?
I'm growing up, two men with people around them would make an agreement. They would shake on it. And that was a seal.
Yeah.
And they kept that when I was little.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, things are different now and stuff. Yeah. And as Christians, I've always mentioned, if we workplace, whatever, we're the ones, if we say something, we ought to be doing it. Now, I get it. We all have best intentions, but we have to be careful when we promise things because we need to be the one to stand by what we say because that means our yes means yes and our no means no. And so we just got to make sure we're fair on the things in which how we deal things. So anyway, we see what's going on here, okay? Let's continue here a little further. And in verse 6 here, and it goes again what we just read from Chronicles. You know, one third shall be at the gate. And, you know, so I'm not going to read through all this. And they got the weapons, you know, from the king, from David. And so they're doing all that. So I'm kind of skipping through. And so the captains of the hundreds did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded. Right? They did everything they were supposed to do. And there's King David's items of war. Okay, I'm just cruising through here. 11. And the escort stood, man with his weapons, right? All that. You got the testimony. You see that right there. They anointed him king, and they clapped their hands. Long live the king. And at that moment, in that time, the rightful king was now heir. And so it's interesting because the fact of it is that he wanted everyone to say, here's the king. But the king had been there the whole time. And the king had been alive for 6 years. And so when you look at these things, and I always try to find something that we can look for ourselves, isn't it amazing that when you really think about Jesus, Jesus is there, but it's only when people, he's there. He's been there the whole time. This king's been there the whole time. And so for a lot of people, the king's there. They just won't accept him. And then they get presented the king because someone shared the word with them or they... Or whatever the case is, but it's accepting that But regardless of anything, you can make any king you want today on this earth, but there is only one rightful king. And in this case, there was only one rightful king, and it was not Althea. And the rightful king today isn't a president. It isn't worldly things. It isn't any of those things. And so we have to just, again, think about ourselves in light of all of this, that we have a king in Jesus. He is the rightful heir to the throne, and he ought to be worshipped properly in our hearts. And then in verse 13, now when Althea heard the noise of the escorts and the people, she came to the people in the temple of the Lord. And when she looked, there was the king standing by a pillar according to the custom. And the leader and the trumpeters were by the king. All the people of the land were rejoicing and blowing trumpets. And Althea tore her clothes and cried out, "Treason, treason." But obviously it's not going to go anywhere. And back in, when people tear their clothes mourning or things of distress happen, and that's what she's doing. And so the outcome is pretty inevitable here in moments. 2 Kings 11:15, and Jehoiada the priest commanded the captains of the hundreds, the officers of the army, and said to them, "Take her outside under guard and slay her with the sword, whoever follows her. Did I read that right? And said to them, "Take her outside under guard and slay with sword whoever follows her." So I'm sure nobody was going to follow her. For the priest had said, "Do not let her be killed in the house of the Lord," right? Because that's where they were. So they seized her, and she went by the way of the horse's entrance in the king's house, and there she was killed, right? Because that was the holy spot, was the temple. Now remember, the priest had lived there, because remember, eventually the child would be moved to the temple, because in that temple there was Holy of Holies, only priests were allowed, but there was places alongside and balconies which some lived, right, and did their functions and so on. So it's kind of a convenient that, hold on one second, I always have to think of the, Jehosheba, and taking the baby and hiding the baby and then being able to raise the baby in the temple because her husband was the priest there. You see how that was pretty convenient. So they worked together. So they just waited for the right time to present this king, which I always think, Bill, because I know numbers probably don't even play anything into this one here, but it's the seventh year, right, that he's presented. I'm certain that the whole time they just couldn't wait any further, because think about it, what was going on with the Baal worship. I mean, a lot of stuff was happening again. Again, the corruption was very influential. So obviously we have a very bad king here with Althea. But I do want to make a point here. Just as a matter of consideration, Jehosheba, I think it's often interesting to me, and I see it more in myself, but we all have something we can do. And it doesn't have to be anything that seems at any point to be significant or not. We all have talents. Here, Bathsheba just did one simple thing. She took a baby. She was able to raise a baby. Was she a scribe? Was she doing priestly duties? Was she a teacher? No. We don't have to be all these things. So my point is that everybody can have an impact of the kingdom. And you can't, because I always say, you can't go to God to pray and say, "God, I realize, God, I think we're both real clear. I have no talents. You created a loser here. I'm not going to be able to benefit the kingdom, so I pray other people can do what maybe I should try to do, but I'm not that good anyway, God." I mean, that's a silly prayer, right? Right? Does it make any sense? Because God created you in his own image, and if you're in his own image, are you restricting God's power in your life? The question I ask, what can you do? And when you do it with your whole heart, best you can, with a great attitude, and love God. Doesn't matter what happens. End of story. Easy said than done. We'll all high five right now. But it is something that you all have some kind of talent, and it's finding what that is and giving it a try. And so I encourage each of us here to find out what things you are able to help out in the kingdom of God. There's plenty of things to physical things to do, and there's spiritual things to do, and there's just a lot of things. It's so just something to consider. Any thoughts on our folks here We've got a lot more to talk about. It's interesting stuff, at least I think so. Any thoughts on any of this? Well, thank you. All right, here we go. So now we have Althea.
Kind of a reference to like the story of Jesus. When Mary got pregnant, they had to hide out.
Yeah.
Her hiding the baby.
Yeah, certainly similarities. How about Moses, right? How about Herod? Herod went to go kill all the babies, remember? Thinking that was right. Herod's stories would because he wasn't sure because a baby was being born. Is that right? That's the reference, correct? The baby was being born, and then he was killing all the babies, the male babies. And so, can you just imagine that? Some of that stuff is so lost in time to where we are as a society today. You know, it really is. I mean, you think about what we have and where we're at and how difficult things were to watch those atrocities happen, and especially even medical care. So, but there was no health insurance companies back then corrupting the system and costing lots of money. We just had some of the Egyptian ways where you'd take bat dung to kill your cut in your skin or something and then have an infection and die. Okay. So in 2 Kings 11:17, then Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord, the king, and the people that they should be the Lord's people, and also between the king and the people. And all the people of the land went to the temple of Baal, right? Remember, she had built that there, and tore it down. Then they thoroughly broke in pieces its altars and images and killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars, and the priests appointed officers over the house of the Lord. You know, certainly you can go back at times where these kings or anybody would, of any substance back in our Old Testament studies that would, you know, whether Moses or whoever, they have these times where it's okay, it's you know, it's kind of the rally kind of thing where it's okay, let's get back on track here. And especially, you know, in like the time of Judges, all of a sudden good, then the new generation bad, and then good. So what do we have here for the moment? Good. Right? They're kind of saying, okay, this has been going on for a while. We're ready. Everybody's in place. Let's all make a commitment to God. And let's get rid of these things. And we do the same thing, don't we? We do it with our own selves. Like, God, I'm going to get rid of this sin. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And there's this moment of triumph. And then all of a sudden, somehow we get back to what's familiar in our habits. And the next thing you know, over here again. And so the whole journey that we have is to try to have more of these mountaintop moments that we try to stay up there best we can. And we have to consider, I think, at times what makes us fall down. And you know, I was thinking about this. For some reason, it's interesting that you look at all the stories. Remember the story of the sons of the prophets when they were going to build a new school? And the guy that had the axe and the axe piece fell in the river. And he's like, oh no. I mean, all the implications are probably borrowed it, didn't have any money, and you know. And then Elijah came along and helped him find it, but he asked him, where was it? And the thought on that little illustration is you have to go to where it was lost. And I think for us, we have to find out where we aren't where we need to be spiritually, what's causing it, and to go to those things. If there's an issue that caused you to, I mean, I even felt today, like when I went home, I'm trying like this major weight loss thing. I'm like, I think I'm down 12 pounds and, you know, and it's just trying to get back, so I put on some weight. But I can tell when I'm not eating, and I worked out before I came here, I can feel sometimes I can get irritable. So I came home today, my wife probably can't hear me, and she was excited about the decorations and stuff. But I was rushing, I got to get to class, right, because I have to go serve the Lord, right? And I'm in my home, and I kind of felt that I was kind of having that feeling of aggravation. And I didn't like it because she's excited to see me and she wants me to share it. I'm like, okay, I got to get this. And I just kind of felt grumpy. And I caught it this time. Whew, thank you very much. But I had went to my room and I thought for a moment. I go, what am I doing? I'm being a Debbie Downer. I'm being a dummy. And I'm so I know myself. So I have to be careful now when I'm not eating as much. And if I'm working out in my calorie, I can just tell. So I just got to pay attention a little bit, right? Because there's no, I mean, that's not fair to her because of me and my dumb attitude. And so I think all of us guys can attest this, you know, that except for Brother Ed, because he's always spot on with Phyllis, I'm sure. But we have those, we have times, and wives too here. Susan, be nice to Eddie, okay? Could be mean to him. But you see what I'm saying? There's things that trigger things for us, and we want to deal with that. We want to just stay on top of the mountain all the time and pay attention. So for me, I was able to kind of go away and just regroup and come out with a smile and say, man, what am I doing? Because I don't want to be that way. So I can find out if we're having arguments, it's my attitude that starts it sometimes. Because if I do this, then she does that, and now we're So again, little things that you read in here, you know, I made a covenant with God. I married my wife. I made a covenant with her. We've got to keep those things tight, people. And we shouldn't have these things happen. So go back. If you're not where you need to be at times, find out what's causing it and be done with it. So anyway, I'm on a tangent. I was thinking about it. That was a freebie there anyway. 2 Kings 11:19. Then he took the captains of the hundreds and the bodyguards, the escorts, and all the people of the land, and they brought the king down from the house of the Lord and went by way of the gate of the escorts to the king's house. And he sat on the throne of the king. So all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet, for they had slain Althea with the sword in the king's house. Joash was 7 years old when he became king. Confusion, that's Joash. They throw an H in there. So don't be confused. I'm going to go Joash with it. They said that they did the same thing with Joam. I actually did some research on how the H shows up, but I can't remember it. It was technical stuff. So I'm just saying that's Joash right there. So don't be confused by that. Peter, Pete, Frankie, Frank. I mean, that's kind of what's going on, I guess, at some level. And that concludes that chapter. Okay. I'm thinking I might stop there. When we get into the next section, we're going to find out that Joadad, the priest, that when he was around Jehu, his influence was really good, and he did good. As we read through this, what do you think happens when Jehoiada dies and that influence goes away and other people come into influence? So I'll leave you for next time, which won't be next week because we have singing. It's going to be a lesson in our next section on influence. And our influences are very important in our Christian walk on who we surround ourselves with. And we just got to be careful with that. And really, we do. So, and so let me ask you, is there, up until this point, I mean, you folks have any questions on anything that we've been discussing? Or, you know, again, I have these, I can make copies again. I think these are good just to kind of, when you look at where we're at. And so, Joaz, after, because we're in the southern kingdom here, when we get back to the northern kingdom, we're going to read about Joaz, which will be the king after Jehu. But during his time, there's more peace. And then now, we're dealing with Joash. He'll be a king for 7 years. Now, interesting enough, when you look at some of the kings of Israel, they didn't reign very long. So it just depended. But you have like kings like Joash, he'll go 40 years. Because he was 7 years old when he became king. Can you imagine putting the crown on his head? Like, they have to fit it for size, you know? But anyhow, so... Any comments or thoughts or anything that was said that anybody want to discuss anything further or share any thoughts? We got a few minutes.
Young king like that, he must have had a counselor or something that had to make a decision because a 7 year old person not going to make a decision.
Yeah, and I think that goes to Joash the priest. I think he was the one that probably counseled him and with him, because remember, it says, as we'll go through it, that while he was alive, he did good. And so he probably just gave him direction, gave him the prim and proper protocol for being a king, and did what he was supposed to do. And again, think about it, because things rally up a little bit.